Good afternoon and welcome to the Dr. Regine Show. It's Monday afternoon, 2 p.m., and you are listening to KHTS FM 98.1, AM 1220, and hometownstation.com. I am a psychologist, children's author, and positive parenting expert in the Los Angeles area. Today, I have a special guest, Donna Tetreau. Donna is a national parenting journalist, an award-winning children's book author, a speaker, an educator, and a nonprofit founder. She teaches compassion, emotional health, and positive parenting strategies to kids and families nationwide. So exciting to have her. And you can catch Donna on NBC News Daily every Wednesday talking all about parenting. Welcome, Donna, to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Regine. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We are so excited to have you here today. So we have so much to talk about. I'm really excited, especially about your incredible new book. I've been checking you out. You've been touring around. Your amazing book called The Castle Method. And right before we came on, we were talking about how I just love acronyms because they're so easy to remember. So I would love to start with that and just to tell our audience a little bit and our listeners, what is the Castle Method?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I've been a parenting journalist for about 12-plus years now, and I am also a mother to two teen boys who are 13 and 14 years old, and I started looking at parenting, the parenting niche, and wanted to educate myself not only as a mom but as a journalist. And so I interviewed likely hundreds and hundreds of people, asked thousands of questions, and the result is this book, The Castle Method. And The Castle Method is an acronym used as a metaphor to build the castle, the family of your dreams. Not the perfect family, because there's no perfect parent, there's no perfect kid, there's no perfect family, but to build the best version of your unique family. And CASEL stands for compassion, acceptance, security, trust, love, expectations, and education. And it's just a method that I came up with based on evidence, expert tips, doctors, psychologists, all these different people that I spoke to and brought this book into being. And I think it's a really good teaching tool for parents who want to learn more about parenting.
Yes, and I've definitely read your book, and that is something that really stood out to me about a lot of, you know, we talk a lot about conscious parenting, authentic parenting, but I love the word compassion. So going on to that is, why is compassion the foundation of the CASEL Method?
Yeah, so compassion really is the foundational building block. All of these are building blocks toward a better parenting life, a better family life, and really better versions of each of us in the family. And compassion is so important because not only do we need to have compassion for our children, but we need to have compassion for ourselves as parents. And what I like about compassion is compassion includes empathy. But compassion takes empathy a step further, in which it wants to alleviate the suffering of another. Not necessarily fix the problems of another, but to help alleviate that suffering. So if we can get into a compassionate mindset as a parent, when we're looking at that tantruming toddler in the store, instead of looking at that toddler as someone who is trying to just make trouble for me in the market as I'm busy shopping as a parent, or just, you know, raising heck and hell all over the place, you're looking at the child in a compassionate light, and you're saying, what's going on with child right now? There's something, right? It could be the child's tired, the child's hungry, the child might just want some attention from you. So looking at the child through that compassionate lens, but then also looking at yourself, parent, compassionately. When you might react to that tantruming toddler in the store in maybe a harsh way or not a loving way, coming back and saying, I'm doing the best that I can. I'm aware of what how I reacted to my child, I'm going to have some self-compassion and know I'm doing the best that I can. So compassion really is foundational to every way we interact with our children, with ourselves, and within the family.
Yes, you know, you brought up the market example, and I remember when my little ones were little, I used to tell them in the car, we used to have a conversation, so I'm going into the market, and I'm only getting milk and oranges. That's all we're getting today. And just letting them know that if you tantrum or if anything else, we're going to come straight out. And many times I've heard also many parents just leave the cart there and just leave the store. And so, but a lot of times parents will ask, well, what is it that I do in that moment when my child is having a tantrum in the store in terms of a tip or a tool that a parent, instead of losing their cool and not reacting, but instead communicating, right? Because I'm really big on communication. And not losing our cool and reacting, because it's so easy to just react. So I like this parallel with being compassionate with ourselves, but also with our kids. But what would be something you would say or recommend for a parent, not just of a toddler, but I also think of a teen, whether it's putting a boundary, because it's kind of like you're putting a boundary in a way. How could you put a boundary in a compassionate way? Like, what would be an example that you could share with our listeners in terms of something that could be helpful?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know what? The teen is just like the toddler, right?
Yeah.
They're just older. So that brain development is going. There's a lot going on there. So look, I think it's really important as a journalist for me to get really curious. Just ask, what's going on?
Yeah.
How can I help you? Do we need to talk about this later? Do we need to kind of table this for now? When we ask questions and ask kids, teens, to tell us how they're feeling, they're inclined to tell us. And if they don't want to at that moment, then giving them the space. So when you're in that chaotic situation in public, it's like, hey, what's going on? How can I help you? Do we need to leave? For the toddler, for the teen, you know, what? How can I help you? It's really getting curious instead of assuming that we know what's going on, because we don't. Sometimes we don't even know what's going on inside of ourselves. So I think it's really important to ask questions. That's something that has proven, at least for me, with my two boys, when I ask questions, they're more inclined to kind of tell me what's going on. You know, in the car ride home, they're tired, right? Maybe they don't want to talk about the school day. So instead of demanding and asking all these questions, just saying, do you need some time to kind of just kind of be, and we'll talk about this later? And they'll say, yeah. And then they'll talk about it later. So it's giving them the space and time. And that is showing compassion, because you're being compassionate in that you're trying to understand how that individual is feeling.
Yes. And, you know, you bring up an important point that reminds me of, you know, especially as I work with teens as well, is giving them control. And I think that it is all about control. And that's where the decision making comes into play. So I really like that analogy. And I think a lot of people hopefully will find that helpful. What do you feel, what makes compassion such a vital component of strong families?
I think that when we know in our family that one of the core values is compassion, we work from that. So we know that in compassion, we're respecting each other. We're valuing each other's opinions. We're looking at the other person and then also looking at ourselves in compassion. I think that a lot of the time, parents, especially now, I mean, post-pandemic, we have been through the ringer. Mm-hmm. We have had to, you know, homeschool, deal with, you know, suffering, death. I mean, we're looking at school shootings. We have so much that we have to manage with our kids. And knowing that we're doing the best that we can and showing ourselves compassion is key in this, because when we can show compassion for ourselves, we're modeling this behavior for our children. And this whole parent guilt, like we're not doing enough, we're not giving enough, we are not enough, it's overwhelming. And so I think that it's so core to an individual and human being. And also, I think it's really important when you reparent yourself, you're going to be more compassionate to yourself. And, you know, reparenting simply is looking at what you didn't get as a kid, not blaming your parents, you know, being in forgiveness with them, but knowing what you didn't receive and giving it to yourself so that you can then allow yourself to give what to your child what they need. And so just compassion is this basic principle and theme that we need to build into our families, into everyday life. And it really can grow a family strongly and be more healthy.
Yes.
And we know this from research. This is, you know, this is evidence-based.
Absolutely. And it's also stepping back and realizing, you know, I'm not, again, I go back to the, no one's perfect. Like we were talking about perfect families. There's no such thing. The grass may seem greener on the other side, but it is stepping back and realizing, what are we doing? Building that awareness. Here's how, you know, I said this statement to my kid this morning. It was wrong and it hurt their feelings, but coming back and realizing that and the power of an apology as well, and being able to say sorry and that I made a mistake, so that it teaches them how to apologize as they get older, right?
Absolutely.
Because that also ties into that. So on the heels of that, before we go into break, is why is it important for parents to practice what they teach? And I'm also thinking about right now college applications. We're all done with that. I myself as a senior, I know we were talking about this earlier, and I know a lot of seniors are going through college acceptances and waiting on the results. They're coming out pretty soon for those who applied early decision, right? What is your take on that? Because I think that weaves in so beautifully here is, you know, for parents in terms of tips for them, for their kids, as they're waiting.
Yeah, I know it's a really difficult time. You know, it's a pressure cooker. We know that academic achievement pressure is the number one pressure for our teens. Mm-hmm. So what is that saying? We're telling our kids grades are more important than maybe kindness, right? This is research-based. So what we have to remember is that this is their journey, our kids' journey. We had our journey into college, and now this is their journey. And just to be there by their side, supporting them, doing everything you can as a parent to just be there, allowing them, you know, to breathe and make the decisions they need to make, because ultimately we're sending them off to a young adulthood, and they have to be able to make these decisions and also be okay with disappointment and failure, and that knowing that that's just part of the journey, and really to be compassionate to ourselves as parents who are leading our kids into college, and knowing that wherever our kids go does not define who we are as a parent. It doesn't define who they are as a student or person. It's just one stop in the journey. It's not the end result. It's one stop in their lifelong journey.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love how you said that. My daughter was showing me yesterday, there was this TikTok going viral, and I can't remember who it was. It was an actor who had won some award. He had won, and he was talking about his failures and how he applied to this one college and didn't get in, and he reached out because he said it was a 97% acceptance rate. And he called and said, how is this possible? How did I not get in? And I think he was just trying to make the parallel analogy. You know, this is 2 years later, and look how I've really took on my talent. It was an art school. And look who I am now, and I've won this, and I am worthy of this. At a time where I thought that my future meant nothing, look at me now. And I think it was such a beautiful message to show to teens right now who are waiting, that no matter where you get in, no matter what happens, it does not define who you are and what your future is. It's just a stepping stone. And for parents to not feel that it's a reflection of them, as there is so much pressure on this topic. So I love what you're sharing.
Oh, absolutely. I love that.
So, What is also another thing you could share with us in terms of the CASEL method besides compassion that you feel is an important message for parents?
Well, talking about college application, when we talk about acceptance, acceptance is something that even if we are telling our child we accept them for who they are, all of who they are, if they perceive rejection, it changes the brain. So that says a lot. Even perceived rejection changes the brain. So we want to make sure that our child knows 100% we accept them for who they are, who they are as an individual, who they are in school, who they are on the field, who they are in every realm of their life. If they don't have full acceptance for us, it's going to change how they feel about themselves, their worthiness. And every child is worthy. And so this part of acceptance is really crucial to understanding who our children are, And even if our child is someone who we don't believe they should be, maybe we have dreams for them different from their own, that's not our role as parents. And over-parenting has taken over what parents are doing now. And, you know, in our generation, our parents, there was kind of this, you're going to do what you do, not too much involvement. And then you kind of came into this generation with this helicopter parenting and this over-parenting that is reducing how our children feel about who they are. We just need to be there to guide and support and accept and allow them to unfold as only they can unfold. And so acceptance is really, really crucial. Yes. And it plays a role here in this college acceptance time and decisions that our kids are making.
Absolutely. And, you know, as you were talking, I was just thinking about sibling comparison, right, in terms of, you know, helping parents understand, I don't want to say the damage, but what can occur for the other child when there's that comparison. And I always talk about how kids are so different and unique in their own way and how uniquely talented, and that one will not learn like the other child and will have different needs and will have different aspirations. So that's another important point that we see a lot. And I think that's really hard. I think parents just find themselves sometimes doing that comparison, but I think it comes from a really good place internally, but doesn't come out in a positive way. Would you agree with that in terms of also research and what you've seen?
Absolutely. I actually talk about, there's a section in my book called Compare No More, because we do know from research that when you compare siblings, it does create issues for children. And so it's, you know, I likened it to when I had my two boys who were only a year and 4 days apart, and I would constantly compare them milestones. Okay, this one was walking then, this one was talking then, what was, you know, until you know, it's okay to look at kids and compare your kid to other kids on milestones, and you might even want to ask doctors about, you know, is my kid doing the right thing at this time, because you always want to make sure that you could test for autism or different things. But ultimately, in comparing who they are as a person or what they're pursuing or how they learn, like you said, they all learn differently. So we want to just keep the comparisons down. Would you, here's what I like to say to parents. Would you like somebody to compare you to another parent? And this, again, goes into empathy and compassion and learning how to be empathetic to yourself. You wouldn't want somebody, another parent, to compare your parenting. So how do you think that a child might feel, a sibling, if you're comparing that child to another child? So when we're deep in compassion and empathy for ourselves, That's why it's so foundational to me, compassion, is that you're allowing for people, individuals, to be as they are supposed to be without those comparisons.
Absolutely. Yes, I love that. We have to go into a little break. I'm so excited. We have so much great content to cover. I'm so excited to continue this conversation. You are listening to KHTS FM 98.1, AM 1220, and hometownstation.com. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Dr. Regine Show on the Teen Hour. I have our wonderful guest, Donna Tatro, and we are here talking all things parenting and her new book, The New Castle Method. So, Donna, welcome back.
Thank you.
So, Donna, I know we had such a great talk talking about compassion and parenting and college applications and all this good stuff coming up for students. But now I really want to touch with you. I mean, we're both moms ourselves, and just really, you know, going back to that compassion piece for ourselves. And I think it's so important, and myself too, as a psychologist, you know, just for us to step back and really look at ourselves in terms of what we tend to struggle with. Because a lot of the times, I don't know if you get this too, after writing this incredible parenting book, if you get this from parents or just people you know, oh, you must have it all together. You must know everything. Your kids must be perfect. And, you know, just seeing, you know, but at the end of the day, that we are very human. And so I wanted to touch upon, just even for both of us, are like, what are some struggles that you tend to encounter as a parent?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, part of the Castle Method, the acronym E, is education. And that is an ongoing education of educating myself as a parent, because none of us is perfect. No family is perfect. My kids are not perfect. I'm for sure not perfect. And so just because you write a book doesn't mean that you've got all the answers. I think that it's a tool, and we want to use tools to better ourselves, just like we would use tools in other realms of our life. And I think for me right now, my two boys are 13 and 14, and they're in that phase where, you know, they're really wanting to kind of start to fly, right, and to do what they want to do. And as a mom to them when they were younger, it was a lot of exposure to a lot of different things so that they could kind of choose what they liked. And now they're honing in on what they really truly like, or what they enjoy doing, or the students they are becoming. I can't facilitate all of that anymore. Mm-hmm. I kind of like to tell them that I kind of put out the buffet and gave them the exposure, and now it's kind of their time to take it away. And I don't mean that I'm going to step back all the way, but one thing I do struggle with a bit is to sometimes just trust them to do what they feel is right. And I talk about trust in the Castle Method, and trust is essential. If we can truly trust our children to listen to their inside, to what's calling them, not what we think they should be called to, is really, really significant, and allows for that growth. And our goal, right, is to allow them to grow into a healthy adulthood. And so if we don't trust them to make decisions, the decisions that they can make as soon as they can make, even as toddlers and then in elementary school and then in middle school and high school, we're hurting them. And so, but my instinct sometimes is, oh no, I know best. I know this or I know that. But I have to pull myself back and say, well, what do you think, Jackson? What do you think, Asher? And allow them to make mistakes, because, you know, a lot of the times that trust is because I don't want them to make a mistake, something that's critical in their life. We want to reduce those mistakes as much as possible. But I think that trust is, you know, allowing that letting go, allowing them to be who they're supposed to be.
Yes. And, you know, is another important piece, because I love the trust piece, the letting go, stepping back and being okay with them making mistakes. When you mentioned the buffet, I said, okay, now go and grab whatever you want from the buffet and make the mistakes you need to make. But I'm also thinking about, you know, for example, just one thing came to my mind is, you know, as you can see, we're in full finals mode, and too with my students and the kids I'm working with, it's all about, well, my parent wants me to do it this way or study this way. So let's take the example of flashcards. Well, my parent wants me to use flashcards, but flashcards don't work for me. But my mom really insists on me using flashcards, for example. And so I turn around and I ask the parent in terms of, I mean, just as an example I'm sharing. And the parent says, well, flashcards really work. And we have to step back and say, well, the flashcards really work for you, but does that really work for your child? So then stepping back, say, well, what do I do? Well, have you really asked the question on what works for them? So how do you study best? What will work for you today? And it's incredible how then they will come up with their answers. So it kind of reminds me of that also. And I think a lot of parents struggle with, that's just an example of studying, for example, but there's so many situations where we don't allow them to make those decisions, right? Out of fear of, well, it's the wrong decision or something may happen, or we're kind of like manifesting these things. So I think it goes back to the communication and, right, and stepping back. And I know you talked about this in your book in terms of like an example that a parent can use to step back or even to self-soothe themselves, because it's usually their own possible anxiety that is projecting onto what's about to happen, right? So the study example, for example, that may not work for you, but that does. And we're not asking the right questions. And I know our listeners would love to hear a question that maybe they can even test out this week. What's one question that you feel encompasses, you know, all your amazing acronyms on the compassion piece, the acceptance piece, that they can practice this week, just asking their kid to create more of that connection and bond?
I love that. And I love the example, the studying example, because it is so true about how if that doesn't work for your kid, you've got to acknowledge it and accept it and ask and figure out what does work for your kids. But, you know, one thing that a lot of parents struggle with, all of us do, is technology, time, and use. And ultimately, we do have to put in the parameters for young children. I mean, it's just they're unable to make those decisions and choices. But when you're looking at middle schoolers and high schoolers, instead of demanding, like, this is the time that you can use the phone or you can't, I mean, you put those in place. Like, you're not going to take your phone or your computer into your bedroom at night. That's just something we know from science. It disrupts your sleep. It causes all kinds of issues, potentially with bullying. There's certain things, right? But allowing your child and asking your child, your teen, how long do you think you should really spend on technology, say, during the school week? You've got schoolwork, homework, you've got extracurriculars and some family time and some downtime. So taking those into consideration, how much time do you think you should spend on your device? This then is allowing them to not only have this buy-in that they have a reason to figure out what's healthy for them, it's then teaching them as they then go off to college how they need to manage things. But you're allowing them some decision-making, and you've talked about this before. It's not that as parents we're giving up, like, our parental control. We're trying to teach our kids how to be adults in the world. And so if we're making all of the decisions based on devices for them, how are they going to be able to control themselves when they go off to college or into adult life? So I think it's, again, really important as much as you can to ask the child, engage the child, the teen, into what they can decide. And it does create that buy-in. And it also creates the trust between you two, the bond that, hey, my mom, my dad really does trust me. That feels good. I don't have to hide. I can be who I am. I can make my mistakes. And so then it's kind of, we're working together. I'm not telling you how to be. I'm just supporting you in who you're supposed to become.
Yes, and that ties in so beautifully with the whole concept you talk about, emotional security, physical security. And I'm going to share an example. When you talk about letting them having that control. So let's say my daughter wants to go out on Friday night. You know, she's 17, and let's say her room's a mess. And instead of saying, you're not going to go out tonight, you're not going to do this, you can't do this, your room's a mess, and coming at them in terms of this very authoritarian, so to speak, right, communication and message, saying something like, well, what time do you think, so it reminded me what you were saying, is what time do you think you're going to start cleaning your room? Because then your room needs to be cleaned before you go out. So which time do you choose? And so then again, we go back to what we were talking earlier, is control, right? And this is part of their emotional trust and building and creating communication and decision making. Because I'm seeing a lot of kids saying, I don't know. Everything you ask them is, I don't know, I don't know. And I don't know, to me, is more of a message of avoidance. I'm avoiding that question that you're asking me because it's making me feel uncomfortable, but they're not able to express it. So on that note, why did you choose to focus on emotional security in your book versus physical security? What's the difference and how do you see that?
So when we think about physical security, you know, we think about housing our kids, mm-hmm. providing them an education, food, clothing, which of course is part of being a parent. But oftentimes we forget about providing them with emotional security. And that's not our fault necessarily if we were not taught that as children ourselves, which most of us were not. It just is generational. So there's no blame. But now that we know how important providing emotional security is to the connection with your child, it is imperative. We also know that emotional security allows a person to work through mental health issues. So when we talk about emotional security, what I basically talk about in the book in this realm is providing our children a safe space to feel all of their emotions, the uncomfortable ones, the difficult ones, the joyful ones, savoring the joyful ones, but being really in tune to allowing all feelings to flow. And that means, yeah, the screaming, the yelling, that's okay, getting it out, then coming back and working through it next time, maybe not as much screaming and yelling. We're a work in progress. We have to allow these emotions to come out so that people, kids, families, parents can feel this emotional security with each other, because emotional security provides that connection mm-hmm. that our kids want from us and that what we want from our children. So I talk a lot about how to allow your child to feel all of their emotions and understand them, and then hopefully move on to another positive emotion. Not necessarily, you can't go from anger to joy in one step, but you can go from anger to maybe some frustration, and then to feeling just, I'm okay, to then maybe going to feeling a little bit better. It's really teaching that range of emotions, and also super important is to teach our kids the impermanence of emotions. Especially when we see our teens who are looking to hurt themselves or thinking bad thoughts. When someone understands the impermanence of their emotions, that they will fade. This is, of course, you know, as a doctor, this does not, you know, people who are clinically, who are mentally ill or have difficulties, you know, this may not apply. You can speak to that. But when we're talking about just providing that education that our emotions are impermanent, they fade, and we can work through our emotions and come out on the other side.
Yes, and also for parents, I think sometimes it's hard for them, like you said, if we're not taught how to express our emotions, because we just can't find the words, but we feel the feeling. So the feeling could be, you know, a child having a stomach ache or a headache, or it manifesting more in physical ways. What is an example for parents? Because I'm just thinking right now as you're talking and sharing all this, a parent thinking, well, how do I show or how do I teach emotional security? Because I really don't know myself how to share my emotions. So you'll have that gamut of a parent not knowing how to share their emotions because they don't want to impose that on their child, versus the other side of the parent who will be completely open, so open with their emotions, mm-hmm. where the kid ends up feeling kind of like taking or parentifying or taking care of that parent. So kind of like finding something in the middle where we're expressing, we're teaching our kids how to express our emotions, because this also bleeds in later on in relationships, right? Because then you see it later on with couples and friendships where we're having a hard time communicating our needs or our wants, or stepping back and hearing each other, right? So this is all part of that, sounds like, the emotional security piece that is so vital. So that's why I want parents to really understand the importance of that it's okay to share our emotions. And saying, for example, like, I'm having a bad day today. Today was really hard. I'll get back to you on that. But what is something else you could ask parents where, or tell parents as an example of what they could share as an example of teaching emotional security? If they're having a hard time, especially with it.
Yeah, and that example is perfect because as parents, we have difficulties every single day, whether or not it's in the parenting realm or our job or, you know, making sure that an elderly parent is okay, whatever the scenario might be, to say to your child, yeah, I'm actually having a rough day. Mm-hmm. You know what that allows for the child? To be empathetic. So not only when you are expressing your emotions, you're modeling for the child that it's okay to not be okay sometimes, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then you're also giving your child the opportunity to show compassion and empathy to you, which is what they need to do, be able to do as they grow and have their own relationships. And of course, a parent cannot put a burden on a child for how they might be feeling. But I'm going to give you an example. Every October, I'm super sad because my mom passed in October 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So when that day comes along, I'll just say to my two boys, my husband, I'm really sad. I miss my mom. Mm-hmm. And I'll get hugs and kisses from them. If we don't show our vulnerability, they will not be able to show it. We're modeling it for them. But on the other side of that spectrum, like you talked about, we can't show, you know, fear and inappropriate ideas that we might be thinking and put that onto our children. But it is okay for me to be sad about my mom. I don't have to put on this big smile. I miss my mom. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just being really thoughtful about the emotions we are sharing. I think that when we're with our spouse, our partner, making sure that, you know, we're arguing or communicating so that we're modeling, so that we're showing that we're wanting our needs met, but, you know, how is that happening? Is it peaceful? Is it respectful? Sometimes these conversations need to be in private. So it's really kind of looking at what's appropriate. And I think, look, I mean, I, you know, there's times where I have to step back and say, okay, I probably need to just kind of leave the room.
Yes.
Because I need my space. And I think that that's okay to teach our kids too. They can, to have space.
Absolutely. So we need to go. Thank you so much, Donna, for that amazing advice. But we need to go into another break. You are listening to KHTS FM 98.1 AM 1220 and hometownstation.com. See you in a bit. Welcome back to the Dr. Regine Show on the Teen Hour. You are listening to KHTS FM 98.1 AM 1220 and hometownstation.com. We are here for the last part of the Teen Hour. Just telling Donna we can be here all day talking about all things parenting. We've been talking about compassion, expectations, so many great topics, which you could find later on the KHTS website for the full recording if you're just joining us now. But Donna, I would love to keep you here all day, actually. But let's get into, oh gosh, this is one of my favorites. Love this. Talking about the difference between harmful expectations and helpful ones that parents may have. And again, we're coming really from this space of education, but I think education is power. We don't know what we don't know, so it is all about educating, just like we would educate teachers and all people from all walks of life. So how can parents take more care in setting expectations in their families? And explain this a little bit, even perhaps with real life examples, how you see it.
You know, expectations, you can have helpful expectations and you can have harmful expectations. When you talk about harmful expectations, you're talking about an expectation that a parent might have that completely contradicts how the child feels or expects of himself or herself. So what we have to understand is that while expectations help raise our children to be who they want to be. So say a child says, I want to get straight A's this year. Mm-hmm. And it's intrinsic to the child. It's what the child desires. Then helping your child maintain that expectation is helpful. Mm-hmm. But if your child does not want to get straight A's for whatever reason, it could be they're not mature enough to say they want to do that at this point. They have other thoughts about what they like. They're maybe not a school kid. It's okay. We have to accept the child for who they are. Of course, we can't allow a child to flunk out of school. That's not what our role as a parent, right? But when we provide expectations that contradict what our child wants and needs intrinsically, we are eliminating the connection with our child. And we're reducing and diminishing who our child is, who that soul of that child is. And I don't think that parents necessarily think that it's harmful, but when you're directly telling a child that I expect something out of you, and if you don't perform this to be, therefore that relates to the child that you don't love them. And so all we want to do is provide love. But the other thing is, there are some very helpful expectations that not a lot of us grew up with. And we know from positive psychology research that positive affirmations, positive expectations actually changes the brain. Mm-hmm. So when we expect positivity and happiness for our children and in our lives, we're providing positive expectations and we're helping our child learn and understand, and we're modeling for them how positive expectations can change the trajectory of your life. If we are always half glass empty, instead of half glass full, you're teaching your child about expectations. You're lowering expectations. And there's something called the Pollyanna principle. Mm-hmm. And again, it's in a positive psychology where when you build on positive positivity expectations, you're growing and growing toward positivity, and you're growing your child to positive results. So it sounds a little trite, or it sounds a little, is that really based in science or evidence? It is. And these are simple tools that we can teach our kids.
No, that's wonderful. I love that. That's going to stick with me. We have one more minute, and I really wanted Donna to, so you could let our listeners know, where can people find you, your books? Briefly mention again the where they can find you too. You do a lot of media work, your Instagram, your Facebook, your NBC News. Go ahead and tell us where to find you.
Oh, thank you so much. You could find my book, The Castle Method, or my children's book, Dear Me, Letters to Myself for All of My Emotions, on Amazon. And my website is donatatro.com and donatatro at IG and Twitter. And, you can see me on NBC and lots of LA stations talking about parenting.
Wonderful. No, it's so great. And we will make sure to add your website too on the recording. It was such a pleasure, Donna, having you today. Such an honor. You're amazing. I wish you so much success with your book. Continued success. We're waiting on more. And thank you so much for listening to KHTS FM 98.1, AM 1220, and hometownstation.com. This was the Dr. Regine Show Teen Hour.